Kia ora, welcome to episode 62 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
It was a huge week for news from a galaxy far, far away, so let's jump in and talk Star Wars. First thing we want to touch on in our news roundup, we haven't been able to do this for a couple of weeks, but some production news about upcoming live action series, specifically Andor Season 2. We know that Andor Season 1 is scheduled to be released in mid to late 2022 and it will consist of 12 episodes. We didn't have a lot of confirmation about what might follow other than the fact that we knew Alan Tudyk initially was going to reprise his role as K2SO, but that involvement was bumped to potential future seasons. But now, via a Swedish website, Stellan Skarsgård, who is an actor that's going to be playing a character yet to be revealed in Andor, has revealed some information that confirms Season 2 will be filming later this year. In an interview on the Swedish website, he says, "We start with Dune Part 2, and then in autumn, it's time for the second season of the Star Wars series Andor." He goes on to say that the first season was recorded in England when the pandemic raged at its worst and therefore took a very long time. We talked about that a little bit in previous podcasts. It was particularly affected because this was a series that was filmed predominantly on location. Skarsgård concludes by saying, "I do not know when they will start broadcasting it. It will take some time so that it does not take too long between season 1 and season 2. So there you have it. That's reasonably solid information that not only will we be seeing more of Andor, quite interesting news considering that it is a full 12 episodes for the first season, and secondarily interesting that whatever character Skarsgård ends up playing, sounds like he'll be doing it in season 2 as well, which kind of implies that the story arc that they've got underway is going to be sort of continuous between seasons rather than quite distinct separate chapters.
Yeah, it's quite something for a Star Wars actor to be even sort of be able to say that their character goes off onto a second season before the first one's even been aired. You know, we don't know what character, we don't know sort of which side of the Empire versus Rebel fight he will be on. I'm kind of personally hoping that he's on the Rebel side. I can't wait to find out a concrete screening time, yeah. Knowing that a season 2 won't be too far behind it. Certainly the year gaps between the Mandalorian seasons or just like live action in general this past year sort of been hard to kind of cope with. So it's going to be absolutely fun when we start getting this real sort of snowball effect of all of this live action stuff finally hitting us after delays with filming.
Yeah, and production's going to be going on continuously while we're watching stuff, so next year should be a lot smoother. And yeah, like I say, we're expecting this third quarter, I think, is what they said in the Disney investors meeting conference. But we don't have a solid date within that 3-month window, but that's just a ballpark. On the topic of Obi-Wan, an Obi-Wan comic series will be coming from Marvel in May. It's been announced on StarWars.com. This is a 5-issue miniseries. I'll just talk about that briefly, and then we'll talk about the wider Obi-Wan situation. This 5-issue comic miniseries is written by Christopher Cantwell with art by Ario Anandito, described as a series wherein he finds himself in his final days on Tatooine, chronicling earlier adventures in his own journals. The tales that are told span Obi-Wan's entire life as a guardian of peace and justice, including his days as a Jedi initiate, Padawan missions, experiencing the Clone Wars as a Jedi Knight, and facing new threats as a Jedi Master. Now, the other interesting thing about this is there's a lot of rumors swirling around about whether or not this will coincide with the release of the Obi-Wan series on Disney+. We don't have solid information about this, but we're expecting Obi-Wan in the first half of 2022, so it seems reasonable that they may leverage the May date for a big announcement, for a big release like this. We'll have to wait and see when the Book of Boba Fett finishes and we start getting a little bit more information and clarity about what to expect next. Because the other thing to keep in mind, we know that the Bad Batch is going to screen in the US spring, Northern Hemisphere spring, so that is March, April, May, sometime in March, April, May. But we don't have a solid date for that either. If these things are going to be jammed in between these windows, then it's going to be pretty tight. And I don't believe they're going to overlap them.
I know that for Disney Plus, they're obviously looking to position themselves as a full competitor to the likes of Netflix and certainly dominate over the some of the newer offerings like Apple TV and HBO Max and things like that. So I think they know that the live action Star Wars and Marvel series have a lot more attraction than just the one-off movies, because they want people to stay subscribed. They need people to get hooked into shows that will keep going for month after month after month. They don't want just the movies. They know that, yeah, like Netflix, you got to release movies every now and again, but I feel like it's Disney Plus's goal to literally have an episode of Star Wars coming out every week with very few gaps in between, because they don't want these lulls where the Star Wars fans were like, well, I've got all the movies on DVD and I just watched the series, so I'll take a 6-month break off where I won't sub for a while, and then when a new show comes up, that's when I'll reactivate my subscription. Yeah, so it could be an interesting experiment to see how much of a continual stream of Star Wars shows we will get out of the 52 weeks of this year. We started already with a show sort of flowing through from very late December. So we started the year with episodes. So it'll be interesting at the end of the year to really count up how many weeks out of 2022 did we not have a Star Wars show to watch that week, which is kind of a crazy thing to think.
There's a lot of episodes in total that we're going to be seeing in 2022. And the other thing, just vaguely on that note, is we're coming up on the finale of the Book of Boba Fett, and hopefully, you know, once we've got breathing room after that, we'll get more information about what to expect. That what might we see after the credits roll from the Book of Boba Fett in terms of teasing new material?
Well, they set the precedent, didn't they, with the Book of Boba Fett? So I'm like, they can't just end it without giving some teaser, a second season, a new show we haven't heard of, giving us a tease for Kenobi or Andor or something.
Yeah, whatever's coming next week. They're not just gonna.
They want to make sure that the subscribers to Disney Plus don't go, okay, Book of Boba Fett done, I'm gonna cancel my subscription right now. They're gonna like tease something to go, no, hold on, you want to come back next week or in 2 weeks. So I'm as amped as I am for the final. I'm really like going to be staying there right to the end of the credits to see, like, I can't imagine them not doing it. They're going to give us something.
Yeah, it would be odd, but we'll find out very, very shortly. Okay, because we're just talking about Marvel Comics with the Obi-Wan comic release confirmed for a May date, it's also worth mentioning that coming up from Marvel, a slightly different approach that they've taken, and I think this ties into the popularity of the character that we're about to talk about. The series that they're going to call Star Wars Tales, and this one's going to be called, the first one's going to be called Star Wars Tales Crescenton, is going to be a approach to collecting the key stories around a specific character. So Crescenton, the comic, will be a collection of the Wookiee bounty hunter's most memorable exploits in the previous comics. It's going to be a singular one-shot, but it's going to collect together stories from the 2015 Star Wars story arcs, issues numbers 14, 15, and 20, as well as the Dr. Aphra annual, which includes Cassanton's rumble with Obi-Wan Kenobi set between episodes 3 and 4, and his clash with fellow Wookiee Chewbacca. And finally, a look into this Blaster for Hire's Trandoshan Gladiator Pit origins and subsequent quest for revenge. So that's going to be a really good way to really catch up on the backstory of some key characters that we're seeing in particular in the live action series. And I think that's one we personally will hunt down, because I haven't read all of those comics, to be honest. I've read selected ones of those, in particular the Dr. Aphra material. But when they're spread out over time and over titles, as they are doing with Marvel at this point, you can sometimes miss some key events if you're not getting them just reliably across the board.
Being a comic collector can be tricky at times, specifically being outside the US. I mean, just about all facets of collecting have been affected by supply issues, shipping delays, things like that. And when these comics come out on a regular basis, it can be hard to really keep up with individual comics. Plus, the cost of freight means that comic issues just cost a lot more in New Zealand. So it's often financially, from a sort of a collecting standpoint, to wait until you get those trade paperbacks, you know, save a bit of money. But then it's hard to sort of keep track of everything. And especially with things like Comixology and that creating a bit more of a kink, we're certainly going to look a little bit more closer to the Marvel specific a digital comic service as a way of trying to keep track, because we're seeing that Disney and the wider sort of Lucasfilm storytelling seems to really want to link things together. I think if you're keen on knowing all of the details, then at least keeping abreast of some of the more pertinent comic issues is going to be like quite intriguing.
It's going to really just add to the other material we're seeing.
Yeah.
But yeah, on that note, you know, we historically have relied on trade paperback collections. I mean, deep historically, I personally have collected every single issue when it was much easier to do so for a variety of reasons. But in this day and age, we've largely relied on picking up TPBs as they come out. But we have been looking at the digital options. On that note, though, I mean, Marvel Unlimited is one option. Comixology is the other main option that has Star Wars titles. Comixology was bought by Amazon about 2014, I believe. And they've just announced that they're going to make major changes, basically absorbing the Comixology brand and current functionality straight into Amazon. The old Comixology website will soon redirect to shop for comics directly on Amazon. And they're describing that you're able to browse, discover, and enjoy, they say, a larger selection of comics and graphic novels. But the problem for those living outside of the US, they say if you live outside of the US, your series of subscriptions will not be moved to Amazon. They claim they understand this is a disappointment, but series subscriptions aren't yet available on Amazon outside of the US. That's quite a big diss to a pretty broad population of, you know, that have been paying the money up until this point. So we'll put a link to some of the FAQs associated with that. You'll still be able to use Comixology to get Star Wars titles, but you won't be able to undertake a series subscription as you were able to do previously with the Comixology functionality. We've got a couple of other just random bits of news to round out our news coverage for the week. Just scrolling through Facebook, I follow Phil Tippett Studios. He put out a video recently that was kind of fun to watch, just a 4-minute look at the more recent remake of the Dejarik scenes for The Force Awakens. Now, this video has probably been available elsewhere, but it was just shared on the Tippett Studios website. We took a look at it, and there was some fun material in there, some fun trivia. So we'll put a link to that because that is something that is just kind of worth watching. I love that sort of behind the scenes stuff. They take a look at, along with John Berg and Dennis Muren, they take a look at the origins of the Dejarik chess stop motion scenes from A New Hope, and they go into how they reassembled the scene for The Force Awakens. Interesting bit of trivia, Phil Tippett, absolute genius and master when it comes to creature creation and stop motion in particular, says that the Mantellan Severit, which is one of the hero creatures that actually wins the match in A New Hope from memory, the Mantellan Severit was a puppet that he made, a articulated stop motion puppet that he made as a kid, that he originally showed to George Lucas for the cantina scene, but which instead spawned the idea for this hologram chess. And just rounding out our news coverage for the week, a little bit of excitement on TradeMe, the local auction site, where we saw a handful, half a dozen carded Toll Toys Star Wars action figures, from the first 12, Han Solo, Darth Vader, Princess Leia, Luke Skywalker, C-3PO, and Ben Kenobi in particular, sell for some very, very impressive values. These were quite sought after pieces, quite hard to find with intact bubbles, figures carded with intact bubbles. Han Solo went all the way up to 10K. We were expecting these to get well into the thousands, but I wasn't quite expecting this to necessarily go all the way to a 5-figure value. Darth Vader sold for 9,550. Princess Leia a little over 6,000. Luke Skywalker a little over 8,000. 3PO pulled in 9,000. And Ben Kenobi 9.6K. Interesting to see this sort of exciting bidding war, and interesting to know that the person who originally listed these didn't have a full appreciation for their value at the time they listed them. They had quite a low starting bid, and I'm sure that person is very happy to be pulling in a little over 50k for a handful of figures that almost got discarded or given to one of their relatives' children, I believe.
Yeah, it's fun to watch auctions of these note. Obviously, there's a lot of interesting Star Wars stuff that shows up on TradeMe all the time, some bargains to be had, but every now and again these gems turn up as somebody's going through sort of an attic full of, you know, childhood things.
I think it's super exciting that these were found and sold locally via a local medium. And yeah, that may well have contributed to the fact that they, you know, there were a lot of eyeballs on them and a lot of people interested in them. And as they got a little bit higher, the number of people for whom the budget was actually there kind of probably dwindled. But yeah, these are real treasures, I think, in many ways. They don't come up in this condition very often, and particularly as a bundle like this. We've talked about Toll Toys and its relationship to Star Wars in New Zealand on SWNZ a lot in the past. We've done a lot of research into the company history, looking at catalogues and internal memos and listings on the New Zealand Companies Register, for instance. So if you're interested in the history of Toltoys and Toltoys carded action figures and other Toltoys Star Wars product in New Zealand, do take a look at the Toltoys coverage on the SWNZ website. And we've got some videos up, and we'll be getting some more videos up specifically on that topic on the SWNZ YouTube channel as well. Alrighty, let's move on to product announcements and then local store reports. First up in product announcements, now these are not things that are imminent. We don't actually have dates for the release for a few of these, but they're certainly very, very interesting. A couple of products related to the Star Wars Visions Disney Plus series, which is a little bit out of the blue, to be honest, but a pairing of Funko Pops have leaked. Am and Kar, the twins in their armor, are going to be coming out as pops, two single pops. These are special edition glow-in-the-dark pops, and images of these came to us via Instagram, and we don't have a solid release date for that, but they're usually not too far off once this sort of material starts to leak. Also from Star Wars Visions, Golden Books, who are owned by Penguin Random House. There is a listing on the Penguin Random House website for the first book from Visions in the Golden Books series, featuring TOB1, 2B1, Toby1. Don't know exactly how that is actually pronounced, to be honest. But this may be the first of more than one Star Wars Visions titles coming from Golden Books. So that's a little bit interesting.
I still think it's a shame they didn't release a lot of the Visions merch at launch It kind of feels like...
That's why it feels a bit out of the blue now, because it's such a lag.
It's kind of dripping out a little bit slowly after the fact. And I guess they weren't really sure how it would go down with fans, but it almost kind of makes you feel less enthused about the merch, knowing that even Lucasfilm wasn't 100% sold that these would be popular items. It sort of... You know, it's just sort of the public perception. It's like, well, if you're a really big fan of the series, well, the merch is there. But I think it's a little bit on the fence as to whether most Star Wars fans are sort of swept up in the hype and excitement at this point to track these items down.
So far, they've tended to focus just on two of the episodes from the entire range, from a couple from Ronan and a couple of products from the twins. It'd be nice to see a slightly broader sweep of the available characters, to be honest. Now, the Toy Fair UK took place recently, and via JediNews.com, we've had some really interesting reveals from the company Jazzwares. Jazzwares is the company that currently owns the Micro Machines brand. Now, Galoob started the Micro Machines brand, and it was, in fact, a mainstay that really kind of got them through some financial struggles when they got the Star Wars license with Micro Machines way back in the late 90s. Galoob fell under the Hasbro umbrella in 98, so the Micro Machines brand was owned by Galoob from 86 to 2016, but more recently, Jazzwares, from 2020 to present, have owned the Micro Machines brand. Anyway, just putting that history aside, the interesting thing is that Jazzwares is celebrating their 25th anniversary with the launch of the first authentically scaled vehicle line in Star Wars history. They're calling it Star Wars Micro Galaxy Squadron. What they mean by that is this is going to be a range of Star Wars vehicles all in scale to each other, no matter how wildly different that scale is. So to achieve this, they're breaking it down into different categories. We have the Assault Class vehicles, Millennium Falcon and larger. We've got the Starship Class, which includes things like the Slave One, Boba Fett Starfighter, and the Razor Crest. Transport Class, including the Troop Transport, and it's Starfighters like X-Wing, Jedi Starfighter, and TIE Bomber. Then the Light Armor Class, TIE Fighters, AT-ST, and finally a Scout Class, which includes speeder bikes and other single-person vehicles. I think this is really exciting. I love vehicles in that smaller scale, but being able to see them next to each other in appropriate relative scales, X-Wings appropriately scaled for the Millennium Falcon and so forth, is a really, really cool notion.
Starships are such a crucial part of Star Wars and not really served as well in the collecting space. You get some big things, like some very rare studio scale stuff, Hasbro hit and miss. The scale is often, you know, dumbed down to fit the format of the figures. We get some in the sort of action fleet scale, some but of the sort of Hot
really
Wheels ones.
But
no, you kind of get the same ones over and over. TIE Fighters, Millennium Falcon, X-Wing. Even if you go into the tabletop miniatures, there's not all of them there because they have to fit within the gameplay. They have to fit within the scale used. And so it'll be really interesting to see just how vast this range is, and I love the idea of it being, you know, sort of relative scale to each other.
So I hope we manage to see these locally. If not, we'll have to source them internationally via the internet and so forth. But I do believe there are Micro Machines products on the shelves of New Zealand retailers as we speak, so it's not completely off the cards that we'll see these on local stores. handful of products that have shown up locally that we want to mention. Really interesting if you're into the Gentle Giant, now Diamond Select Toys mini busts, to see that the Dark Rey 1/6 scale bust, this is the Rise of Skywalker version of the Rey, obviously, it was a New York Comic Con 2021 exclusive, and it's been out for just a little while now from a couple of retailers. But the New Zealand Mighty 8 pricing is $189, which is really quite hard to beat, particularly for a exclusive figure. So 1/6 scale bust available from Mighty 8 now. We'll put a link for that down below. Also at Mighty Ape, a few new Mandalorian t-shirt designs. Now, I know there's been tons of Mandalorian t-shirts across the board, but these are quite neat sort of full bleed prints, edge-to-edge prints. So they're coming in at $59 and in most sizes featuring the Mandalorian, and there's some other more standard versions as well, just new. More links for that down below. We saw some interesting Valentine's Day themed products at EB Games recently. Valentine's Day pillowcases and t-shirts. Their pillowcase comes as a pair featuring Han and Leia and the famous I love you, I know quotes. $34 for the nicely packaged pair. And a couple of t-shirts. Slightly cheesy, I have to concede, but that is the way things come out for Valentine's Day on the whole. There is a t-shirt featuring the heart-shaped Death Star and a quote, you make my heart explode, for $29. And a woman's t-shirt cut, you're the Obi-Wan for me, also at $29.
When it comes to Star Wars t-shirts in New Zealand, EB Games is consistently one of the most affordable places to go. When Warehouse does have stuff, and same to be said for Kmart, they tend to be very cheap, but it's on the whole very rare and very, very basic prints. The last one that Kmart stocked was just a classic Star Wars logo, and I'm sure we all have something there. So I really do appreciate EB Games consistently has Star Wars licensed apparel. We saw stuff for summer, we saw stuff for Christmas, Halloween, these sort of fun variable themes that we tend to have to look overseas for. So I think that these are really fun and a lot cheaper than some of the imported stuff from the likes of Mighty Ape and some of the other stockists that where you end up inevitably paying a bit of a markup.
Yeah, no, that's a fair description. The thing is that there's almost always something from each of the major franchises that they're looking at any point in time. So there's almost something Star Wars there, and it's always topical, and it's often exclusive and new, unique designs.
A lot of their designs are specifically EB Games exclusives. Yeah, that will say something like Electronics Boutique or Zing on the back of the tags, and noting that these are exclusive, so you won't find them elsewhere. And if you're really lucky, if your local store, if you like to check frequently, sometimes these shirts will show up as cheap as $10 if they sit around for a while. Yeah, so it's definitely worth rummaging through the sales sections at the physical stores.
EB Games is that they move through their product fairly fast. They have new stuff in the pipeline, and if they have old stuff sitting around when new stuff is about to hit the shelves, you can get some pretty good bargains if you happen to find the right size for any particular design. And that actually relates to a number of their product lines, or their own product lines, maybe not the Hasbro toys as often, but they do show up on clearance when they're sick of having them on the shelves. But yeah, clothing in particular, you can get good discounts.
And just a little bit of sort of leaked information. Some of the new Black Series Star Wars figures are starting to hit stores in the US a little bit early, even before most Americans can pre-order them. This wave includes Omega and Echo from The Bad Batch, and Ahsoka Tano as she's seen in The Mandalorian. Now, I think all three of these figures are going to be quite popular. Ahsoka always sells well, and this is her new outfit look from The Mandalorian. So if you're collecting Mandalorian figures, she's going to be a must-have in that lineup. And then, of course, we have two very, very important characters from The Bad Batch. So if you are collecting your lineup for The Bad Batch, of course, you now have Echo with his mechanical arm and his new Bad Batch gear. And of course, Omega. And so I'm definitely looking forward to getting more info about when they might be showing up locally.
Yeah, one way or another, that sounds like it may be one of the next waves that we see locally. So yeah, we'll share information about those when we hear that they have hit local retailers. Alrighty, episode 6 of The Book of Boba Fett. From the Desert Comes a Stranger, directed by Dave Filoni, written by Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. This was an episode of many parts. Many exciting parts, and we're going to have a lot to talk about and break down over the next little bit. We saw Cobb Vanth still in Mos Pelgo. We saw the Pike Spice Runners and confronting Cobb Vanth. We saw Din Djarin flying to the about to be constructed or currently being constructed Jedi Temple to try and find Grogu again. We saw Ahsoka and R2-D2. Oh, we saw Ahsoka talking to Din Djarin, telling him that yeah, he might actually be not doing Grogu a favor if he interacts with him at this point. We actually see Grogu being trained by Jedi Master Luke Skywalker. Some really, really crazy scenes there. We saw a flashback, Grogu's flashback to his time on the Jedi Temple. So we've got a little bit more context and information about his backstory. Whew. And that's before you even get to Din Djarin going out to Cobb Vanth to see if he can get more muscle for the upcoming confrontation. And then the appearance of no less than Cad Bane, which was pretty blimmin' exciting. We saw even more excitement, stunning excitement, shocking excitement, when the Pikes set off a bomb in the sanctuary. And the concluding, leaving us just frustrated having to wait a week, the conclusion was all about Skywalker forcing or implying that Grogu has to make a choice between the Mandalorian way and the Jedi way. I think that's a summary of all of the bits and pieces. Let's get into detail.
Yeah, I was excited to see Cobb Vanth showing up here. Obviously, the sort of episode opened on Tatooine. The title was, you know, From the Desert Comes a Stranger. So I'm like, okay, yep, Tatooine.
I loved it. I thought I liked his characterization in this even more than the early episodes. He's just totally in his space, you know, without necessarily interference or having to interact with Din Djarin's story. We just kind of got this glimpse of him functioning as the Marshal of Freetown.
Yeah, and we see him being very, very good with a blaster as he takes out 3 out of 4 of these Pikes, having some sort of clandestine gang meeting on the fringes of his territory. He now obviously does not own Beskar armor. Boba Fett was able to reclaim his armor. So he makes a comment saying that, you know, he's being a bit more careful these days because obviously he's not bulletproof, but he's got the skills to sort of, you know, keep law and order as much as he can in the town. He's made it clear that he does not want spice in the territory of Mos Pelgo. And yeah, we see them kind of, the last remaining Pike, sort of take his money and leave. We don't know if the Pikes will take kindly to this. We assume that they probably won't. Considering how they do business.
Clearly they don't. I think that was what actually initiated Cad Bane. I don't think it was Din Djarin's interaction with Cobb Vanth, you know, that brought Cad Bane into the picture. So yeah, obviously Cad Bane's working with the Pikes and Cobb Vanth has set himself up as an obstacle to their business.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying just the way that we're getting such a fun variety of these sort of background characters, but sort of, you know, slightly down the sort of credit list, but they're characters that you just sort of instantly gravitate towards and really enjoy. And you know that they're never going to get like their own series or something, but I just enjoy the fact that he was such a cool character that we met in the Mandalorian series. And here we are getting sort of more, and the way that things are going, we're definitely going to get more of him in the next episode, which is really cool.
We'll come back to that. Yeah. I love Timothy Olyphant in this role. He conveys so much about Cobb Vanth's character by doing very little, just in terms of his interactions with the deputy, for instance, and the bartender, and Cad Bane later. He does very little, but he conveys so much, and I really love that.
He has that kind of that way of acting that works so well with a sort of Western flavor.
You can read his face.
The looks that they give each other between his deputy, between Cad Bane, where they're that kind of standoff in old Westerns where they're just kind of like, you know, staring at the other people, you know, reading them, you know, assessing their skills and what's going to happen and trying to sort of second guess each other. I think he does that really well. There's a moment where later on in the episode where the deputy says something and you can just kind of see him just slowly turn his head just to kind of glare at the deputy. He doesn't say anything, but his look just speaks volumes there.
So Cobb Vanth dumps out the spice that the Pikes were carrying, which again says a lot, even though it has an immense value. It's just not in his zone, not something he wants to be dealing with. So he just completely discards it. Next scene was amazing. A silver Naboo N1 flying into a green planet. As soon as we saw that, we had pretty much knew that he was heading to Grogu. Didn't know exactly where it would be. Yeah, didn't know exactly at what point in time, you know, Luke's setting up the temple might be taking place. But as soon as the N1 touches down, interacts with R2-D2 and gets taken to a construction zone and a little bit of a clearing, we're kind of blown away by we see these very early startings of what we recognize as the Jedi temple that we later see in the flashback scenes in The Last Jedi.
Yeah, so you know that he's in the last episode, he said that he needed to visit his little friend. So I wasn't expecting them to sort of jump into this. I thought this might be kept hidden for a bit. And then, of course, as he's flying into the screen planet, we see the little sensor of R2 pop up. And you're like, oh my gosh, that's R2. This means he is going to go find Luke and Grogu. So that kind of set it straight off without even having to...
Specifically referencing The Empire Strikes Back, where we start on R2-D2's life form scanner when he's looking through the Hoth, through the hangar bay doors on Hoth, and he panned down to see a full reveal of R2-D2 Nobis.
Yeah, so he kind of gets led through to where the building is being built, and there's all these kind of neat ant-esque big droids finding rocks from the forest, bringing them in and stacking them all very neatly to make the sort of dome stone building structure. And obviously Mando's like looking for somebody to talk to because these droids don't seem to be interacting. And so the droids make him a bench. He gets the idea, okay, I'm going to be waiting for a while. So he lays down, and then we jump to Luke with Grogu, and they are off sort of on a little hill under a tree doing some Jedi meditations. We get a moment there where Grogu's learning to pick up a frog, and Luke picks up many frogs, and then they sort of go for a walk, and then reference Yoda. And then as soon as he starts talking, I'm like, okay, yeah, he talks about Yoda, references size matters not, and also references the sort of do or do not. There is no try, you know, classic sort of Yoda teachings, which is kind of fun. Obviously, he had some time with old Ben, but he probably considers Yoda to be his foremost master because he would have spent the most time doing his Jedi training on Dagobah. So this was kind of a fun callback to it, especially later on in the episode. But before we get to that, he starts referencing the connection to Yoda, whether Grogu will remember his childhood or his planet, or basically inferring to home. And as the audience, you're like, okay, are we gonna see Yoda's home planet? What will Grogu consider to be home? And then as Luke places a hand on him to help him remember, obviously using the Force,
Vulcan mind meld,
we suddenly jump back to seeing Order 66 being carried out within the Jedi Temple on what we assume is Coruscant, because it's in a corridor. So we see the 501st blue and white clone troopers that Anakin marched up the Jedi Temple steps with, and
unnamed, unrecognizable Jedi.
Yeah, it seems like three Jedi in front of Grogu. He seems to be being held or
protected
but in some way. We don't see anything sort of behind Grogu. It's all kind of centered. The sort of vision effect on these shots is reminiscent of Anakin's kind of Force nightmare. It kind of has this sort of blurry edges to it, which I think works really well. And through Grogu's eyes, we see the three Jedi in front of him get killed by the clone troopers, which is, I know, piecing a lot of puzzles together for the fans that have like wondered about Grogu's history way back when we first know that he's Force sensitive.
Yeah, to know that he was at the Jedi Temple at that time. It raises the completely unanswered, and it's at this point largely unanswerable question as to who still saves him and takes him away. What is his fate after that point in time? So I hope they don't completely leave us there. We might not get more about that until Mando season 3. I will mention a little thing that some people noted on the wall, because we're trying to work out what's going on, who's involved. There is a very intentional symbol on the wall of this corridor that this scene's taking place in, and it's been identified as relating to Barriss Offee, which is a little bit of a curious move, because she basically went dark side in the Clone Wars. But at this point, we do know that she has not died. She was imprisoned. Whether or not that will actually come into play, we do not know. But it is worth mentioning it was not accidental that that symbol was visible for one reason or another.
Yeah, like as a side note, I was always rather sort of as a Barisophy fan, slightly bitter with the storyline twist that they gave her in the Clone Wars. I know a few other Barisophy fans were quite upset that they didn't just sort of create a new character for this plot.
So she had a very complicated storyline.
If they bring her back in an interesting way, because if she was a true Jedi, if she had stayed on the light side, she would have been executed alongside the clones, you know, with Luminara and Aayla Secura and all of the other characters that we saw killed in episode 3. So it's intriguing. If they find a way to bring her back.
It's a little bit of a stretch, but the thing is, Dave Filoni straight up said when he was talking about the Clone Wars episodes that she was in that there was one version of the story where she died rather than being imprisoned. And he said he chose the story arc where she was imprisoned because he had further ideas for her story. So maybe at some point Filoni had a redemption arc storyline. So we may be getting, we may not even be talking about that Book of Boba Fett at this point here, but we may be talking about just Barisophy in general. But a potential redemption arc is not completely off the cards, or some other positive involvement.
Yeah, we know that Dave Filoni can come up with some really twisty ways of connecting things together, bringing characters in and things like that. And he doesn't sort of just leave characters alone. You know, we're seeing Cad Bane showing up. We see Darth Maul being, you know, sort of resurrected with his cyborg legs and then having quite a lengthy thing. You know, Ahsoka wasn't, you know, just left alone at the end of the Clone Wars. We see her again in Rebels. They find more ways to bring things back. They know that fans go through this with a fine-tooth comb and go look for every little clue.
When you look at that scene really, really closely, not only is it visible and identifiable, there is a moment, and it's more than just a couple of frames, where the sort of dreamscape aura that's surrounding most of the frame clears enough for it to be, you know, pixel perfectly clear and interpretable. So again, very, very much not an accident that it's there for fans to notice.
Which is interesting because whether we get any kind of connecting up, but we know that in the show, Ahsoka and Barriss were friends.
Mm.
Ahsoka knows Barriss very well, so it would be interesting to see if this comes up in any way in the Ahsoka series. Is Barriss actually out there running around, you know, like what happened there? Did Barriss, you know, like somehow smuggle him out, and because she was on the dark side, the clone troopers didn't really go after her? Or like, what happens there? You know, they talk about the shroud of the dark side has fallen, that it's sort of hard to sense things, so maybe they just don't know that she managed to escape with him. You know, like, who knows? But I love to see where they take these little threads. Yeah. It's not just going to be the end of it. No. I know we'll hear more of it if it's in a comic or if it's in a live action in this show or the next. I love these little tidbits.
So a bit of a side distraction there, but it does kind of tie into the very next frame after that Order 66 flashback is Ahsoka talking to Din Djarin and describing Luke Skywalker as a friend of the family, obviously referring to Anakin Skywalker, which is a really cool drawing together of all these sort of threads that Dave Filoni's familiar with and worked with.
It's not even the only reference. Later on, in a couple of scenes later, she references that Luke is like his father.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously, she's not talking about Darth Vader here. She's talking about the Anakin that she knows and seeing the sort of moments of that relationship that she can see in Luke, which is quite special, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So Ahsoka goes on to say that Grogu will be the first student at the school, and that it was, in fact, Grogu's choice to train with Luke, not Ahsoka, because if I remember correctly, they had a conversation earlier on where Ahsoka said she wasn't going to train Grogu back in the previous season of The Mandalorian where they first encountered each other.
Well, that's why Grogu doesn't go with her.
Yeah.
She leaves, and obviously Din Djarin and Grogu are still on a quest to find a Jedi to train him. So, yeah, so it wasn't just Ahsoka going, well, I'm technically not a Jedi, so I shouldn't train him. It was sort of Grogu's choice, I guess.
At that point where Din Djarin can actually see Grogu off in the distance training with Luke, obviously a little bit of pondering on his part beneath his helmet.
It's one of those funny moments where you can't see his face, but you can sort of see his face, and where you can just imagine the expression on his face looking up and seeing that, we don't really know how much time has passed here since he sort of let him go off with Luke. We don't know if this is weeks, months, assume not years, but clearly some time has passed and he is still grappling with the sort of the loss of the distance. He knows Grogu is safe and healthy and happy, not dead or anything, but still he's finding that separation hard to manage.
Yeah, so he makes a really hard decision and it seems like he concedes that it's in Grogu's best interests for him not to intervene, not to interact at this point in time, and actually passes over the bundle that he had for Grogu to Ahsoka and makes his way back to his starship.
Yeah, I guess a lot of fans were kind of hoping for a reunion.
Well, it's not over yet.
Yeah. So maybe they are saving that for later down the line. Obviously, as some final moments in this episode, I'll certainly leave that open. But we do see that Grogu sees the N1 Starfighter. Yeah. It's not exactly obvious whether he knows that that was Din Djarin or not.
Mm.
So we don't really know. He kind of reaches up to the sky when he sees the Starfighter leave. Like he's reaching out, like sort of slightly sad. But at the same time, the training montage kind of shows us that he's not really the best at using the Force. So I don't know that he would necessarily be able to sort of read Mando. Perhaps that was implying that even though his other skills in the Force are not strong, he's really bonded to Mando and can sense him otherwise. So we don't know if that is going to play a role, because obviously Ahsoka and Luke are slightly concerned that he has attachments. Obviously the two of them are the people that probably know the best what happens when Jedi have attachments, because we saw that these are possibly two of the closest people to Anakin in terms of, you know, his Padawan and his son would be very keen to not to repeat that sort of situation. But in any case, after that scene, we get a really, really cool classic Jedi training montage.
Yeah, before we go too deep into that, because this has some of my favorite clips, actually, to be honest, I just want to acknowledge the fact there is a different person that is playing Luke Skywalker, that is Luke Skywalker's body double, compared to when we saw him in the final episode of The Mandalorian. Graham Hamilton was the stand-in for Luke in this episode. Previously, it was Max Lloyd-Jones, and we talked about him in a couple of podcasts back, because Max Lloyd-Jones appeared as his own character as in an X-Wing in Din Djarin's Tatooine episode. But Graham Hamilton is the new stand-in for Luke. I mean, if you haven't seen photos of him online, take a look at his Instagram, which we'll put a link to down below, because he has facial structure which very strongly resembles Luke Skywalker, and that in part we believe has contributed significantly to the, you know, to the step up in CG and deepfake facial replacement that we see for this version of Luke, which was really quite mind-blowing across the board and on the whole. Graham Hamilton, just on his just as a note, on his Instagram, did have some really fun things to say. He said co-creating Luke Skywalker for the Book of Boba Fett with Master Mark Hamill was one of the most magical and fulfilling creative experiences of my life. Deep gratitude to Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau for bringing me into the family, and to all the geniuses, Star Wars and Lucasfilms, who remind us of the power of myth and the deep responsibility of artists who bring these archetypes to life. It's hard to express what this all meant for me, how unimaginably moving it was and still is. The 5-year-old kid who sat night after night in a basement in Montana watching Star Wars is living his best life. Just a interlude there, but I thought that was really quite fun to acknowledge and to hear how passionate he was and how appreciative he was as to being able to contribute in this way.
I know as fans, we're very aware of the significance of seeing Luke Skywalker on screen again. So I think it's really appreciated by the fans and the viewers to know that the person that's kind of stepping in for Mark Hamill here is fully aware of the importance of and how incredibly amazing it would be to be in that position.
So we move into a training montage where Grogu is in a backpack, which is very similar, if not identical, to the one that he carries Yoda on Dagobah. We see him running and jumping, and my favorite moment perhaps of most of the scenes of this where is he does a absolute classic Dagobah flip in the air that just, I don't know, it really just took me back to the original trilogy in quite an interesting way.
I thought it was particularly interesting because it really felt like they were flexing their muscles on how much improved the sort of face mapping CG Luke face that they had gotten here. I'm seeing a lot of internet chatter talking about how this is a step up. It was sort of well known that after Luke's appearance in The Mandalorian, there was somebody that kind of did their own version online, and it impressed Lucasfilm so much that they actually hired him. And it seems like their efforts to improve on the last season's sort of CGI Luke face have really paid off.
Yeah.
Because when his face is seen in The Mandalorian, he's tends to stand very still. Obviously, it's a lot easier to map a CGI face, deep fake, whatever, onto somebody that's standing still and not doing a lot of movement. In this one, he is moving around all over the place. He's flipping, he's running, he's doing lightsaber practice and things like that. The camera also feels a little closer to his face at times. And
more complex facial expressions and head movements.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, you know, I know some people are always going to nitpick, but honestly, it looks like they cloned, you know, 1983 Mark Hamill. It was really quite amazing. And I think it really allows the audience to get more into the emotion and the storytelling than sort of taking back, trying to critique the CGI. I mean, if you go back and look at, you know, just about all the Star Wars films, there are elements of computer wizardry that were amazing in their time and then date a little bit. I mean, we know that they always go back and tweak the lightsabers a little bit.
First version of Jabba the Hutt in the special edition of A New Hope.
Like, I mean, the whole thing about ILM has always been progression, you know, doing the best that they can with the tools that they've got at the time. And then in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the line, they can do better things. So yeah. I'm just excited to see where this is going because it unlocks so much storytelling potential within Star Wars, and I'm just absolutely loving seeing Luke.
So the other callback
doing more than just standing there.
The other callback to the original trilogy that really was fun was the use of John Williams' themes, Luke's themes during this training montage. Just a little bit in there, and I actually enjoyed the music on the whole. Some of the other music that was written for the Book of Boba Fett specifically, but the way they blended it with Luke's themes, John Williams' material, really, really, I don't know, just helped with that bond back to the original trilogy.
Particularly evident in some of the quieter moments. I thought it was really quite neat seeing Luke's face on screen again with sort of classic music playing. It was just, it was hitting home.
Yeah, so we see him working with his green lightsaber. We see the Jedi training remote and teaching Grogu by demonstration, but also by the use of the training remote.
Yeah, where he's finally getting Grogu to jump more, and then we get this sort of montage of Grogu jumping
clearly
a lot.
Clearly picks it up fast.
Yes. Because he's motivated to not get zapped by the Jedi training remote. And during the sequence, Ahsoka comes in to kind of come and check in on them. And obviously she now has the little Beskar gift that Mando has given her to sort of pass on. And we get a couple of moments. This is when she talks to Luke. He's kind of seems a little bit unsure about his abilities as a Jedi Master. This is obviously the first time he is really properly training a Jedi of the next generation.
It's a big decision to set up a temple for him, I think, take on that level of responsibility for a whole new generation of Jedi. So it's obviously on his mind just a little bit that he wants to do things right and take advice where it's available.
It also implies that he hasn't been able to find other Force sensitives to train if Grogu is the first. And so he's sort of a bit unsure. He says that he's not sure if Grogu's learning or just remembering, because he knows that he would have spent time in the Jedi Temple. So he's not really sure if it's his ability as a teacher that is seeing Grogu's abilities improve. And Ahsoka sort of comments that sometimes the sort of the Padawan leads the master. Obviously, she has her own attitudes about the sort of Jedi master Padawan relationship due to her. She was always very confident with Anakin. You know, she always had her own ideas and didn't always take instruction lightly. So I think she sort of has a little bit of a balanced view here. And of course, she has more experience with the classical old school prequel era Jedi training, whereas Luke has only gotten sort of a very condensed version of it through Yoda, of course. And then she goes to leave and Luke says, "Will I see you again?" And she kind of looks a little bit sort of contemplative and says, "Perhaps." So I feel like that's sort of left open. We don't know. I love seeing those two together on screen. I do hope we see more of them, but I know that could just be a big tease for the audience, that they don't have something specifically in mind for that, but they want to leave the possibility open because we know that they've got Luke down. They can put him in anywhere that's going to fall within the correct timelines. We know there's an Ahsoka series coming up that is going to be around a very similar time frame because it's going to have Rosario Dawson portraying Ahsoka. So it's going to be in a similar sort of time time frame, I would imagine. So we don't know whether we will see Luke showing up there as well. Kind of fingers crossed, because I think that would be fun.
Right, so Din Djarin's flown him back to Tatooine at this point. You mentioned earlier, and I think it's a kind of an interesting point, that you would have loved to have seen what vehicle Ahsoka's actually flying at that point. We just see her wander off to wherever that's parked, just as an aside. But yeah, so Din Djarin returns to Tatooine in his N1 and actually approaches and flies into Jabba's Boba Fett's palace, where a strategy meeting is taking place. They've got Cassantin, they've got the mods, they've got Din Djarin just showing up, the Gamorrean guards and so forth, all around a hologram, just having a bit of a conversation about what resources they have and what resources they need.
Yeah, sounds like the mods have sort of been doing reconnaissance. They're very good with all their sort of tech at spying, not so great at the fighting. They talk about needing muscle, experience and things like that. And that's obviously
where... They've got tech and weaponry, yeah, but not necessarily just longevity in terms of learning and gaining. You know, they've got a level, yeah, of street cred, but not necessarily street skills to the extent that a lifelong bounty hunter or gladiator would have.
Yeah, because we've now got the likes of Din Djarin, Fennec Shand, Boba Fett, and Black Crescenton, and these all have, whether we've seen it on screen or depicted in comic books, but that we are very aware of how very talented all four of these characters are, but they know that they can't take on the entire Pike Syndicate on their own, that they're going to need a little bit more. They kind of need, like, you know, foot soldiers, I think they so Mando says he can help with that, about them needing foot soldiers.
It takes off again.
We get a cute little flying montage. We see him flying over Tatooine. He passes by a Jawa Sandcrawler. Obviously, this is in the same area as where they killed the Krayt Dragon in the Mandalorian series, because this Jawa Sandcrawler has a huge Krayt Dragon skull mounted to the top of it, which looks really quite cool. That would be awesome to see in, like, action figure form or something like that. But yeah, and they kind of, like, wave up at Mando flying overhead. I don't think they whether they would know that he was one of the ones that helped kill it, but yeah, it's kind of fun. They seem excited to see him. And then we see that Mando has gone to Mos Pelgo to look for Cobb Vanth, because the two of them know each other. He helped them. I guess the Krayt Dragon might have just been sort of a gentle reminder to audiences why these two people know each other, what they did together the last time we saw them together, which was obviously take down the Krayt Dragon that was sort of terrorizing the town. They go inside for a drink. We see again the Krayt Dragon bones are sort of decorating the inside of the bar at this point.
Well, they go inside for a drink. Din Djarin offers to buy Cobb Vanth the drink. I thought for a moment there Pedro might take off the helmet, but alas, it wasn't going to be the reveal.
Yeah, we don't know whether he's going to be, like, extra careful because he feels like he got a telling off and has now got to sort of prove it to himself that he...
As a side note, Pedro's really busy at the moment filming The Last of Us, so a lot of the bodywork has been done by the stunt doubles, and he's just doing voiceover work, so maybe we're not going to get that lucky to see another face reveal.
It works, though.
But it ties into the story, yeah.
Yeah, because the thing about, you know, being able to sort of reclaim his honor and get back into being a Mandalorian, back into his clan, I feel like that's going to come up again in his own series. So I feel like it works that we're not going to see his helmet off here. He did it for very specific reasons, and they were tied around Grogu. I'm sure that just having a drink or, whatever is not really going to count. I think it would be against his character. So I think that works. He's probably spent his entire adult life not having drinks in bars. Yeah. So I guess you'd be sort of very accustomed to that. I dare say getting drunk would not be a great benefit for a bounty hunter that has to kind of keep their sharp wit and sort of alertness at all times, you know, in case somebody sneaks up behind you or tries to grab you or whatever. So he's talking to Cobb Vanth that they both know that spice is going to come through this part, that the Pike Syndicate is trying to take over Tatooine, and not just certain areas, but all of Tatooine.
So, yeah, a little bit of an exchange where some fun lines, actually, but Mando says to Cobb Vanth that there's no easy way to ask for a favor. I think Cobb Vanth replies something along the lines of, you know, that's the thing about you, your huge smile makes it easy for you to talk anyone into such things. So Cobb Vanth does start to come to an understanding about what the threat is, and he says he'll see what he can do. And on that note, Din Djarin does depart, and Cobb Vanth talks to the bartender. He says he needs to get the people of the township together for a group meeting where they're going to either put it to, well, his plan is to either put it to vote or one way or another talk them into defending things as required.
Yeah, it's obviously that they make a reference that things are square, they're balanced, nobody sort of owes anybody for this, but I think he's aware that he's only one man, there's one deputy, there's only so much he can do if the Pikes decide to sort of really just, you know, come in and try and control everything. So he says to get all the men and women of fighting age.
Yep.
So it looks like he's like kind of thought about this a little bit, and it's like, okay, yeah, we banded together to take down a threat previously, which was the Krayt Dragon, and it looks like, yep, they're gonna gather it again. We also get in this one a mention that they have renamed Mos Pelgo to Freetown, obviously because they sort of freed themselves from the Krayt Dragon, so that may play into things, the sort of the spirit of the townspeople.
Yeah.
They want to be free, they don't want to be dominated by gangs or
Freetown's what it's Pikes. Freetown's what it's called in the Chuck Wendig novels, because Chuck Wendig has actually created the Colvanth character in Freetown, this part of town. And Mos Pelgo historically actually shows up in Stales, the Old Republic, just as a note, but that's subsequent to the its initial references in the Aftermath novels. We're calling it Freetown at this point, but Mos Pelgo is the region, and it's been named by those different names in different other installments in the Star Wars universe. So Din Djarin departs, and we have another shift to another same scene, effectively, but a shift in focus to the horizon.
This is where the title of the episode really comes into play. This episode is called From the Desert Comes a Stranger, and it wasn't immediately clear what that was referencing, it is in these final minutes that we finally see. We see a sort of a dark figure on the horizon walking into town. Cobb Vanth kind of looks a little wary. He tells everyone to kind of go inside, even before we've really gotten a clear shot of this, because we don't immediately recognize who this is, but it's fairly clear that they're a bit ominous.
Yeah, I think he knows that any stranger approaching the township, anyone that he's not familiar with, is a potential threat.
Yeah.
Particularly with the goings on with the Pikes of late.
Mm. And then as the figure gets closer, we see the sort of iconic wide-brimmed hat. And when it gets closer, it is obviously revealed to be the notorious bounty hunter, Cad Bane.
Yeah, and this was an awesome reveal. Very, very slow and deliberate. They started off with the brim of his cap covering most of his face, so you can just see his mouth as he speaks. Same voice actor as the previous appearances in The Clone Wars, Corey Burton, which is very, very cool. Presumably a body double for the actual body and wearing the prosthetic mask and prosthetic teeth. But either way, a very cool reveal, showing off a very, you know, interesting version of Duros teeth and mouth. And I think the way this was implemented, presumably with minimal prosthetics over the sort of mouth structure, teeth obviously are not real, meant that you got really, really cool articulation and synchronization between the stand-in and the voice actor on the whole.
Yeah, who is a really menacing figure. Obviously, he always has been every time we've seen him. And it was just really exciting to sort of show for him to show up here. Obviously, he is a bit older. This is quite some years after we have seen him in the Clone Wars, but he is clearly still a threat. He's still very proficient. And for him to have survived in sort of very risky situations all of that time just goes to show that he is not one to mess with. And he says in no uncertain terms that he doesn't want the people of this town to sort of rise up against the Pikes. He is obviously an enforcer for the Pikes that is going around making sure. And because Cobb Vanth kind of shot a few Pikes at the start and told them to sort of get out of town, they have sent in Cad Bane to kind of tell him in no uncertain terms, that you're going to regret that. If you don't get involved, then you'll all be safe, because he's doing it in the context of the town now. He knows that he just his very presence there is a threat to the townspeople, and saying just stay out of our way, you'll be okay. And clearly Cobb is not going to do that. He's a man of honor, integrity. He's not really going to just sort of back down and let bad guys.
So during all that monologue, Cad Bane does make specific reference to his grudge basically against Boba Fett. He refers to Boba Fett as a cold-blooded killer who worked with the Empire. He says that quite menacingly and threateningly. I think it's really sort of weighing on, you know, significant to him as, you know, how he feels about Boba Fett. Just as a side note, it's going to be a really interesting finale, because he also interacted with Fennec Shand in The Bad Batch, of course. So, yeah, there's some real heavy personal relationships going on here.
Yeah, it's be really interesting because I don't think this is going to be the last that we see of him. I'm sort of gearing up, and I guess a lot of fans would be, to see him involved in whatever conflict is coming in this final episode. He remarks to Cobb Vanth that you should have never have given up your armor, basically a threat like, you know, you're wearing no armor and I'm a great shot, you know, you're not going to stand up to me. And then, of course, we get the shots of the serious eyes between Cobb Vanth, Cad Bane, and the deputy that has kind of snuck outside. He obviously doesn't want to leave his sheriff, as he will, on his own. But unfortunately,
he doesn't really realize how outgunned he is.
Yeah. He sees that Cobb Vanth doesn't look like he's going to draw his gun, sees that there's going to be an inevitable shootout. He goes for his gun, but obviously the poor deputy is not a match for Cad Bane, and so Cad Bane draws. He manages to get a shot into what looks like Cobb Vanth's shoulder before basically unloading his blaster into the deputy. So as far as we're, as the audience, as we can see, the deputy is not getting up from here.
No, he took a number of rounds to his torso. Cobb Vanth, on the other hand, we've been talking about him as, you know, a really fun character that we really like, so we, as well as many others, really would like to see him again, and we're hoping that that's going to be the case. The things to note on that particular topic is that as soon as Cad Bane has departed, the townspeople rush over to him and seem to render aid to him. And if you freeze frame it really carefully, it looks like the VFX guys specifically made the blaster bolts hit just his shoulder, not his main torso, not any vital organs or anything there. So I'm still holding out pretty reasonable hope that we will see more of Cobb Vanth yet, that this is probably just going to enrage him, just steal him to, you know, to fight back more than anything.
Yeah. And at this point, Cad Bane just kind of walks off into the distance, and I'm sure we have not seen the last of him. But we get two final scenes after this, yes. Two very, very important scenes. We're suddenly back at the Sanctuary, the sort of club, casino, bar run by the Twi'lek Garza Fwip. We see two Pike enter. They sit down and they don't seem to want to buy anything. They sort of refuse drinks.
No one's paying much attention to them, but they are carrying a Cantona, a ice cream maker, which they put on a table. The drinks are offered. I don't think they actually say much.
No. No, like the Twi'lek two servers that we have seen in previous episodes offer to, if they want to, take their helmets for a cleaning, which is obviously what they said to Boba Fett and Fennec, and they basically filled them full of credits. So they're trying to be friendly. They're trying to basically do their under the table sort of, you know, sort of pleasantries here, you know, you come into our place, we'll give you some credits, everything's nice. They refuse this. And
in the background, the band's just playing. We've got the Astromech playing, we've got the Bits playing. Interesting that Max Reverb was specifically not seen, but that's another story.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, back to the Pikes.
They get up and leave, and a server droid notices that they left their Camtono and kind of picks it up and holds it up and sort of, oh no, you left your Camtono. At this point, the Pikes are just out the door, and you can see just this brief moment of sort of realization in Garza Fwip's eyes. She's standing just in front of the server droid before a massive explosion rips through, and obviously the Camtono this time didn't contain credits, it contained an explosive, a bomb of some sort, and it looks like everyone inside is annihilated.
It looks pretty devastating.
We see the explosion go out onto the street, out the front door. Yeah. So we know that anyone in the vicinity is probably not surviving. Certainly not Garza Fwip, as she was standing so close to the server droid that was holding it.
That is the unfortunate presumption. I mean, they show it as an external shot. Maybe that was because it's easier. Maybe that's because there is some other story element that's yet to be revealed. But an explosion from a container somewhere in the middle of the room that blasts out multiple doors and windows kind of implies that the sort of blast radius, the devastation radius, is most of the interior. So yeah, we're presuming that there's no survivors at this point.
We know that some of the other gangs in Tatooine frequent this bar. Yeah, yeah. So we know that Trandoshans, and it might be seen as a bit of a sort of
trigger point.
Yeah, towards some of the, because they don't know whether they were specifically targeted and just happened not to be there that day. But yeah, I think it's going to send a bit of a warning shot to just about everyone.
It's kind of curious. I'm not 100% sure what their motivation to do that was, who their target was, or what the message they were trying to state was. But I guess that would, you know, become clear. It's, in terms of the story, it is possibly going to raise the heckles of some of the other gangs as well.
Yeah, because we've seen them sort of start to apply a bit more of a heavy hand. You know, they haven't appreciated some of the interactions that they've had. And I feel like this is them really showing that they're about to go to, like, we've seen the sort of build up to war. I think this was them actually finally taking the first step. They want to sort of pull the trigger first here before anybody starts making attacks. And they kind of want to really want to scare everyone to backing down. Maybe, it was a big threat move. But then after that, we get one final episode. We are back with Luke and Grogu on the as yet unnamed Jedi training planet. We don't know the name of this planet yet.
First revealed in the sequel trilogy, but just described as a secret planet at that point. Hasn't been actually revealed, hasn't been given a name anywhere, and we still don't really know its name. Which does raise the questions to how Din Djarin found it. I guess he still had the capability to track Grogu at some level in the same way that when he originally found him.
Well, we know that there was a tracking fob for Grogu.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So I guess, yes, we just assume that he still has that in his pocket, or maybe he, you know, basically copied a dupe.
It's supposed to be a secret location.
But we see Luke sitting on the floor with Grogu with sort of a piece of fabric spread between them in the newly completed Jedi training building with all the stones. And he is giving Grogu a choice. He lays out the tiny chainmail shirt from the little bundle. So we now know, yes, it is a little chainmail shirt made out of Beskar. So that was the clue from the rings that we saw the armorer making. We didn't see the final product, but it's very cute, very small. And then the other item that he puts before Grogu, he pulls out Yoda's lightsaber and he says, this was my master's saber. I guess Yoda had it at some point. I believe he dropped it in the episode 3 fight with Palpatine when they're fighting in the Senate, but I assume he must have had it with him on Dagobah at some point for Luke to have it. I guess somebody will put all the puzzle pieces together and figure out exactly how that kind of went through the sort of chain of
possession.
And then basically tells Grogu that you can only choose one. Grogu seems excited. He sort of leans towards the chainmail and then seems really excited by the saber. And Luke is like, which one do you choose? You know, you can be a Mandalorian or you can be a Jedi. He seems to not really want him accepting both, because he knows that Mandalorians are all about kinship and closeness and sort of fierce bonds, and Jedi have to kind of let go of all of that if you're going to sort of walk a pure light side path. And then the episode ends with sort of Grogu looking up, and you can imagine his sort of young mind trying to grapple with this lifelong, very important decision. We don't know if he will have to make a very
we don't know for sure if it's a decision or a test.
Yeah.
But either way, it's a lot for him to deal with, and he has to come up with a right answer that's going to be very, very significant one way or another.
Yeah, because obviously the Jedi need to rebuild. They need to find anybody to train. They might not be able to afford to be quite as picky about the circumstances of the Force users that they find.
Well, they probably won't be recruiting them from such a young age as was historically done as a
because
starting point.
Because there were a lot of Jedi, so they would find the younglings around the planets, you know, because people are like, oh yes, my child is Force sensitive. Off to Jedi Training Academy you go. But seeing as that's been now decades since that was established, it's not like people were offering up their Force sensitive kids to go training. And Luke is one guy. He's not going to be roaming around. We knew it took a fair amount of effort for Grogu to reach out to the Force and find Luke, and that was only because Ahsoka instructed them to do so. So not too many Force sensitives would have any idea that there is a Jedi Master out there to possibly find. So we don't know how picky people are going to be. This might just be a little bit of a throw-off for the audience. You know, is he going to stay with Luke and become a Jedi? Is he going to go back to Din Djarin? I mean, it sets up a lot of questions, which I don't think they're going to have the time to dive into in the final book of Boba Fett. I know the critique of this episode is that we only got a very brief look at Boba Fett during the sort of strategy meeting in his palace, and he didn't say anything. So we've had two episodes where Boba Fett essentially hasn't really been in them or said anything. And I feel like there's so much story that they need to somehow wrap up in one episode left. I don't know how they're going to do it. This thing better be like an hour or 2 hours long, because we've still got a Rancor that we haven't seen properly. We've seen its claws.
We haven't seen it awake. Yeah.
Yeah, we saw it lying down, kind of being depressed, and they're talking about training. I really thought we'd get a little bit of the training and stuff like that. But honestly, still super, super excited for what we have seen in this. And it really does keep hammering in. I know I say it a lot, but this really does open the door so big for the all sorts of references, the way that characters can jump across. You know, I never thought after seeing Luke that we'd be seeing him again so soon. And in the Boba Fett episodes, you know, obviously Boba Fett and Luke have a bit of a, they've crossed paths a bit in the original trilogy. And then seeing, you know, Ahsoka coming in, seeing R2, getting all sorts of characters and things showing up. So it's really interesting to see what that might mean for future episodes, how many classic characters, new characters are going to cross paths and all sorts of things. So I cannot wait for the final episode. This is, we know that previous finals have kind of just been like mind blowing, and this has just had so many elements in it that I just don't know how on earth they're going to do this final episode.
Well, fortunately, not too much longer to wait, but yeah, it could go just about anywhere in terms of all the threads that are currently open at this point in time.
I mean, it could just be completely open-ended and it's not actually resolved and they're like, hey, check out season 2 coming in this month, you know, like, oh, nah, you know, like it could be quite a cliffhanger, you know, unless this thing is 2 hours long. I don't know how else it can be wrapped up.
All right, well, we'll be talking about that very, very soon at this rate. We'll talk about it in our Twitch channel straight after the episode screens. There's a link to that below as well. You can just listen into our Twitch channel shortly after the end credits roll. And, of course, we'll be talking about it in next week's podcast as well. Really big episode, really big podcast this week, but that's about it for today's installment. I guess we're done doing talking. If you've got any thoughts on topics we discussed today, we're definitely keen to hear them. Leave a comment on the YouTube page or our website page for this podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders, and another podcast episode next week and every Tuesday. Don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Kia ora, kia noho, haumaru, thank you for listening and stay safe.
Tūro Hawaiki, may the Force be with you.